Hello and welcome to Trail Mix by Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dusty. If you're joining us for the first time, Trail Mix is the short format episodes of our show, while our long format episodes explore one hiking trail in one national park, one park at a time. Trail Mix allows us to dive deeper into things we didn't get to cover in our long format episodes, including interviews, history, science, and environmental justice.
That's right. And in keeping with the theme from this season, water and why it's important, this episode is all about the Colorado River, the lifeblood of the West. So what do you know about the Colorado River?
I know that the Colorado River is a very important waterway that a lot of people depend on. Mm-hmm. It is the water source for many, many, many places. Cities, I mean, certainly smaller towns along the way. And there's a ton of tributaries off of it that also communities, areas, cities, towns are like dependent on the water from those tributaries. So there's a lot. It is the backbone of resource for a lot of people.
Yeah. Absolutely. Very succinctly said. Do you know how many states actually utilize it?
I would venture that it's at least 15.
Direct impact is probably a little less than that, but okay. Yes. But okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. Good guess.
But all around right. There.
Yeah.
To begin, it's important to understand the scale of history and geologic time that the Colorado River has been in existence. We will concede this is a broad and sweeping overview to get to a general idea on the course of the river through history. Obviously, there is plenty to dive into on this subject, and you can find much more in-depth geologic history if you would like. That being said, the story begins with the upheaval that created the Rocky Mountains about 55 to 80 million years ago, as the North American and Pacific plates crashed into each other, creating this impressive fold mountain chain. Around this time, the Colorado Plateau was also rising. But rather than crumpling like the Rockies as two opposing plates crashed into each other, this uplift occurred without much carnage, and the plateau rose, and quite a lot, without much damage. North of the plateau, the Great Basin was forming, much lower than the plateau itself.
As our friend erosion did its work through the elements, three major rivers came into being, including the Green River, the Wind River, and the Colorado. Being a powerful eroding force itself, these rivers began to carve much of the West. Hampered only by time and volcanic eruptions that covered these areas with layers of ash, the rivers continued to shape the landscapes of the West. And not in small ways by any means, as these rivers didn't outlet to the ocean millions of years ago, but a fairly large inland sea northeast of the Colorado Plateau. As time marched on, it's believed that the Colorado River that we know today formed through the combination of a multitude of other water sources, both waters that were cutting into the Colorado Plateau in other directions, and volcanic dammed lakes on the plateau that eventually overflowed and joined forces to create a powerful erosive force. As the river cut deeper into the plateau, other tributaries that had yet to join this powerful overarching river were soon a part of its waters. Over the millennia, dammed glacial lakes helped to quickly carve some canyons due to the volume of water contained within them, while debris carried from further northern reaches of the plateau flowed ever downward, aiding in the erosive factor while also helping to transform the landscape through damming and overflow.
In a sense of geologic scale, the course of the river is more or less the same as when humans first started wandering its banks. While in the Grand Canyon, the scale of the river's impact on the landscape is very visible, from a historic perspective, in the scale of human time, the river, sacred to many indigenous people and important to the livelihoods of many in the West, is deeply in danger.
And what could be a big contributing factor to this danger? Well, climate change and human interaction, of course. While we'll talk about climate change and the impact on the Colorado River in this episode, we first have to understand the constraints that have been placed on the river by people. From dams to reservoirs to agriculture, the river has been used by people in a way that has tamed the river and utilized it for gain without thinking about its overall health and long-term well-being.
The gold rushes of the mid-19th century were what drove many further west. That and the idea of manifest destiny, as further underscored by the fact that by the mid-19th century, most of the continental United States belonged to the United States. There were no more wars or squabbles with literal neighbors or with European powers. this land is your land, this land is my land, that kind of thing. As people moved further west with greater opportunity, so did the need to feed them. Ranchers and cattle were not far behind, and with cattle came the need for water. To produce a gallon of milk, about 4.5 gallons of water is needed. And to produce a ton of beef, between 1,800 and 2,000 gallons of water are needed. Yowza, that's a lot of water. That definitely puts into perspective how much water livestock will use, and it's not great.
As ranching culture exploded in the West, the landscape shifted and solutions were needed to underscore growing populations of both humans and livestock. While small streams could be dammed easily to allot for water for grazing, irrigation for farming also became important. In 1902, the Newlands Reclamation Act offered federal funding through loans for irrigation projects. Several acts followed, including the Warren Act of 1911 and the Reclamation Act of 1914, which further divvied water rights in the West and began the process of taming the rivers therein through damming and reservoir systems. As land ownership grew out west, multiple Western states looked from their smaller rivers and streams to the largest river in the neighborhood, the Colorado River. The water rush, as it were, brought about an overarching water law to satisfy the needs of Colorado River states, the Colorado River Compact of 1922.
The Colorado River Compact of 1922 became the law of the land when it came to managing and regulating the use of the river by the seven states of the Colorado River Basin. Concerns over the river and proposed projects like the Boulder Dam, later renamed the Hoover Dam, had states anxious about how to ensure water rights for their growing populations. As the Supreme Court ruled in the right of first use, those who used the water first had claim to its use when water was short. The states devised a compromise. The compact did several things. Along with splitting the Colorado River Basin in two, the upper and lower basin, it also guaranteed each of the basins the right to use 7.5 million acre feet of water a year from the Colorado River system forever. To give you a sense of scale for the amount of water that is, Lake Erie contains about 392 million acre feet of water. At 15 million acre feet of water each year between each basin, under this compact, in about 26 years, these seven Western states used the amount of water equal to the amount of water in Lake Erie. Since its inception, theoretically, they have used about four Lake Erie's worth of water.
This compact allowed states in the upper and lower basin to feel comfortable with any planned water projects like dams and reservoirs in each of their respective basins. The upper basin was to not allow the water to drop below 75 million acre feet for any consecutive 10 years. The lower basin states, depending on the year and conditions, could consume an additional 1 million acre feet of water. And both basins had an obligation to deliver 1.5 million acre feet of water to Mexico, as ratified by a 1944 treaty. And of course, because America was built on fairness, all the indigenous tribes who utilized the waters of the Colorado River and held it sacred were a part of these negotiations and got everything they wanted. Except that's absolutely not the case, and they were completely shut out of the conversation.
Are we shocked?
No,
not that at all. The American government system shut out the indigenous tribes of the area?
Nope.
When talking about
resource
something
management
that is sacred to them?
Yeah. I mean, it's also wild to think about management of resources like water when it's like water is something that we can't control. We can adjust in some ways, but it's like you're going to provide 7.5 million acre feet each year. And also, just remember, you owe 1.5 million acre feet to Mexico. It's fascinating. Obviously, they're gauging it and they're measuring it, but it's wild. It's like, this isn't something humans are producing. They're working with it and trying to manage it. And resources of nature, it's especially something as abundant as water, although we'll talk about abundancy in a second. Like, how do you do that? It's not something that's growing, that it's like, you owe us, like, a ton of wheat that
right.
You can just say, okay, I can plan for that and I can plant it and then I can harvest it and then here's your ton of wheat.
Right.
It's not something that you are actively participating in the process of. You're just along for the ride.
Yeah. And the other thing about water is that water moves.
Right.
You can't just grow water. Like when it comes to wheat, obviously, like,
right.
Hopefully if the conditions are right, you could grow that in a certain area and like like on a farm where certain right. farms are able to produce certain foods because of where they are and the temperate environment where they are. But water moves. Water's on the move. Once the water gets to the ocean, it's not like you can get it back to Colorado easily.
No.
No. No, you just have to work with where the water is flowing.
Right, right.
And if something occurs so that the water is no longer flowing from that certain place, then yeah, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
So here we are with this solid deal to ensure that the Colorado River serves the will of the governments of seven states and two constitutional republics. And it totally works, right? Right? Well, not exactly by any means at all. Basing the allotted amounts of water for each basin and Mexico on a number in 1922 was not likely to be the case moving forward into future decades. Because what has become an issue for the Colorado River? You guessed it, the thing we mentioned earlier, that has finally come back around. Let's say it together, Mike.
Climate change. The shifting climate of the western United States in the last several decades have ultimately meant less water in the Colorado River to be split among the states and Mexico in this compact. While amendments to the existing compact, Supreme Court decisions, dam and reservoir projects, and drought contingency planning have come into play, there is no updated compact for the Colorado River Basin. As the seven states most recently missed their mid-February 2026 deadline to update the compact, the looming threat of the federal government stepping in to concoct their own plan hangs heavy. As previously stated, plenty of adjustments in emergency planning had happened prior to this planned update, and for the most part, that was due in part to the fact that the negotiators from each state knew that if left in the hands of the federal government, that damaging cuts would be made across the board. So, what has changed?
For one, consequences have not been outlined by the federal government, who only has just started to help to facilitate the discussions. The U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, which is under the Department of the Interior, has no commissioner in its role since the new administration has been sworn in. Therefore, the stick isn't really there at the moment. On the other hand, neither is the carrot. As the states involved have split themselves into groups based on which basin that they are a part of, upper or lower. These states, while having a long-standing history of listening to each other in order to suss out the issues, have fractured, finding that their basin's needs are more important than the other, which further throws chaos into the mix, making it harder to find common ground. So for now, things are at a standstill, which, because of the science of it all, isn't great.
Despite the rose-colored glasses view of how much water the Colorado River would be able to allot for each of the basins, when you look at the trends over the last several decades when it comes to the health of the Colorado River and its output, the writing has been clearly on the wall. Since the year 2000, a severe and ongoing drought has plagued the West. This drought has only continued to be exacerbated by climate change, as the Colorado River cannot survive without a snowpack.
The western states, with high elevation peaks and alpine ranges could typically depend on robust snow every winter. As storm after storm would travel through these regions, the snowpack would build, typically from the early fall to the late spring, depending on the altitude. As temperatures warmed naturally in the spring and into the summer, these snowpacks would melt, and not fully, allowing for both a water source and a snowbank, which future winter storms could then build upon. It was a cycle that worked and allowed that bareness of the West and its deserts to be tempered with water all season long.
While rain in spring and summer storms are helpful by way of water, they don't allow for the landscape to gradually receive the water as it does with a healthy snowpack. The slow release of the snowmelt actually provides for the landscape better and is safer as opposed to no snowpack, heavier rains and storms, and an increased likelihood of wildfires. This past year of 2026 has been a particularly bad year for the snow drought out west, which will directly impact not only the health of the Colorado River, but the ability of western states to combat fire season. Along with the historically low snowpack, a heat wave in March of 2026 also worked to decimate what little snow was already there.
As the climate changes and gets hotter, especially in places like the Colorado River Basin, where temperatures have risen more than any other part of the continental United States, real solutions are needed to protect the landscape as well as to ensure water for the communities and people within the range of its basin. Along with providing water and meeting the demands of the 1922 Compact, the Colorado River is also a giant source of hydroelectricity for the West, as several dams along the river, including the Hoover Dam and Glen Canyon Dam, supply a great deal of power to these basin states.
So none of this is great.
No.
No. And it's not been, it's not new information. This has been, especially in the last several years.
We knew it was coming.
Well, yeah. I mean, the science is, you know, if we choose to agree with science, which I
and listen tested to science,
and tested right. and proven and peer reviewed, then we could see the, you know, the outcome or the likely outcome. Part of the issue too is, like, I feel like in the last several years, the water levels of Lake Mead and Lake Powell have been talked about, because there comes a point where the water falls below a level where those dams are functional as like a hydroelectricity producing agent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, also, you know, those are giant reservoirs that are part of the sustainability of those communities. And, you know, water is an important commodity for everyone. It's an important resource for everyone. I'm going to strike what I said. Water is an important resource for everyone. And so without water in those spaces, you're, you know, you're potentially damning what future communities can survive, not even grow, survive really is where we're at. Yeah.
It's an incredibly urgent situation. Because we have to figure out something. And right now, when we choose not to listen to science, then we exacerbate real problems for real people.
Right. It's clear that new compromises are needed in order to sustain the delicate balance of the Colorado River and the plants, animals, and people that rely on it. While we can in no way control the weather, we can certainly have a hand in adjusting the climate and in ways that no one could have ever thought or believed. What does the future hold for the Colorado River and the western states that rely on it for so many things? Time and a firm belief in science will only tell.
The sources for today's episode include the PBS.com article, Why Colorado River Negotiations Stalled and How They Could Restart, by Karen Schlatter and Sharon B. Meagle.
The article, The Colorado River Compact on watereducation.org.
The article, The Wild, Wild Western Water Wars, by Gabriel Gurley on prospect.org.
The independent study, The Colorado River, History, Issues, Solutions, by Mark Petroquin.
And A Quick Natural History of the Colorado River from SibleysRivers.com.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.